Hello, I'm Colin King, and you're listening to CFRU's ongoing coverage marking Prisoner Justice Day. One of the aims of PJD is to raise awareness of alternative forms of justice, other than punishment for revenge. I'll quote from the PJD website, "If there is ever to be social justice, it will only come about using a model of healing justice, connecting people to the crimes and helping offenders take responsibility for their actions." In support of this goal, we're going to talk to a man named Russ Kelly, who has an amazing story to tell. Russ has a personal connection to a process called restorative justice that began in 1974 with a landmark case called the Elmira case. Russ is with us now in studio. Hello, Russ. Welcome to CFRU, and thanks for talking with us. First of all, maybe you could tell us a bit more about the Elmira case.
Well, the Elmira case goes back to May 18th of 1974, at which time myself and another individual went out and became quite intoxicated. Mm-hmm. And we're touring around the back roads. The police pulled us over, took away our booze. And just as well that that happened, because we had quite enough to drink by then. From there, we proceeded back to Elmira. We went to back to the apartment, and for some unknown reason, we just decided to go out and raise Cain. So we went about destroying property in Elmira, slashing car tires, smashing car windows, throwing rocks through plate glass windows of houses, destroying a flashing light at an intersection, smashing the front window of the beer store, and breaking the cross off a display case at one of the local churches.
Wow.
A gazebo was damaged, a boat was punctured and overturned in the middle of the street. And all of this for no reason whatsoever, just out to raise Cain. We didn't know any of the people that we damaged their property.
Right.
It was nothing personal. It was just two teens out making a wrong choice and being stupid, actually.
Yeah. So what, I guess you were picked up shortly after by the police?
The call started to roll into the police station about 5 in the morning. It was about 7 in the next morning that the police were banging on the door of the apartment. We woke up, we were still quite intoxicated, and I think because the police confiscated booze from us in the early hours of that morning, maybe suspected that this was a good place to start to find out who did that damage.
Right.
They took us down to the police station, questioned us, and we realized what we did. Yeah, we knew that it was wrong, and at the same time we decided that we're not going to lie and say it wasn't us who got the wrong guys. We owned up to it and admitted to what we did, because we knew that it wasn't right.
Right. So what happened next then? You were charged?
We were both charged for 22 counts of willful damage. We were held in custody without bail for, I believe it was about a week. Then we were released from custody on a promise to appear. And I think it was about a few weeks or months later, we went to court. And in the meantime, Mark Yancey, probation and parole officer at the time, and Dave Worth, member of the Mennonite Central Committee in Kitchener, had a meeting, and Mark was assigned this case. And he floated the novel idea at the time that wouldn't it be neat that these two offenders meet their victims, apologize, make restitution, and hear the victim's side of the story and let the victims have a voice, where this has never happened before. Mark didn't think it was going to fly. However, when it came time that we went to court, Mark Yancey expressed this idea that he had to Judge Gordon McConnell. Gordon said, "Well, this has never been done before. I don't think we can do this." He said, "This is treading new waters, and if these two offenders are willing to do this, then I'll give it some thought. But other than that, I can't force them to do it." Mark Yancey communicated this information to us. And being that we did, we screwed up and made mistakes there, and we thought, well, this would be the right thing to do. And good chance that we'd get off a little better than just facing the judge alone.
Right. So there was a bit of incentive there to go along with this?
Yes, it was. Although it was a very tough decision because, as I think you could understand, that it would be, or some people would say anyway, it'd be a lot easier to go to jail for a while than to meet all these people face to face.
Yeah.
See the anger in their eyes and this the disgust on their face of what we did, damaging the property for no reason whatsoever.
That must have been pretty scary to contemplate having to do that, eh?
It was, but after the other accused and myself talked it over, we decided that it was the right thing to do, and we did. We went around to each house, sincerely apologized to the victims. We asked them what they were out of pocket from the deductible from the insurance. The insurance didn't cover. They told us these amounts. All this information was recorded by the probation officer. And 3 months later, we came back to all these houses with certified checks, and it was easier walking up those sidewalks then of these houses to pay back the restitution and repair the harm that we did to these people. There was varying responses. This one elderly lady, she said that she really commended us for for being accountable for our actions. And she said that that she would hope that her grandson would do this if he were to get out of line. Another gentleman wasn't quite as receptive. He said, "What these two young guys need is for me to take them all back and give them a good look." And that scared me. I was shaking in my boots right there. There was varying responses. One lady said, "You know, I've got this $100 check here in my hand, and I never expected to have this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give it away where it's going to help someone else." And that was really something. And when I saw these people, this one elderly lady, I looked at her and I really felt shame. Because looking at her, and I thought, you know, she's probably somebody's grandmother. She could have been my grandmother. And it really made me feel it in my heart and in my gut that we did wrong, and it was definitely the right thing to do, even though it was really hard confronting the victims, apologize to them. Because now it wasn't just someone's property. It was a person that we're talking with.
Right.
And now we're seeing emotions and feelings that we're dealing with as well.
So I guess this became known as the Elmira case then, because this was the start of the restorative justice process as a model for dealing with crimes.
Yes, it is. Mark Yancey saw such a positive outcome from this, and Dave Wirth as well. And Mark went on to build a career of this. It took much, much work, countless hours on his part. And this was the start of community justice initiatives in Kitchener. The program was called the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program, VORP for short. And that's where the victim and the offender met, and restorative justice let the victim have a say. Because before, the adversarial system was that an offender created a crime and he broke the law, therefore he shall be punished, fined, go to jail, what have you. And the victim never had their say. And this brought the victim into the picture, which was seemed to be more fair.
Sure, sure.
The victim was the one that was offended most, not the law itself. The law is just sitting there, it's the government.
Well, Russ, I guess restorative justice isn't, it's maybe a new concept for Western court systems, but it's not really new.
No, it isn't. Restorative justice goes back hundreds of years. The Aboriginals use restorative justice. And from my understanding, that's when the elders of the community got together with the victim, the offender, their families, and everyone that was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of punishing someone, they were they were more shamed into correcting themselves from the wrong that they had done. The idea was to repair the harm that was done to the other person. If you stole a person's goat, you give his goat back to him, and you don't do it again, and you learn from it. There wasn't the idea of locking a person up and throwing away the key. A person doesn't learn anything doing that, as our jails are today. Jails are like a university for learning crime, better at it, not to get caught the next time. Many of the programs that were in jails have been taken out due to funding. Programs that help people get back on track, and I don't think that's the way to go.
Right.
Yeah, well, restorative justice in the Aboriginal community has been around for hundreds of years. It's only new to the Canadian criminal justice system since 1974, and that started with the O'Meara case.
Right.
And from that, it went global.
Excellent. So how does the program work now, the VORP program?
Well,
is it handled the same way it was your case?
No, it's quite refined now. At the time, the Mark Yancey, the probation officer, stood behind us with a clipboard. We walked up to these houses unannounced and just tried to see if we could get a hold of everyone and make restitution.
So you just kind of showed up on the doorstep.
Yes, we did.
Hi, we're here.
Yes, it was the first of its kind, in North America. And but now, both parties would have to be agreeable. They would meet on neutral ground, and there would be two mediators sitting down with the victim and the offender. And the mediators would be only there to facilitate the resolution that the victim and offender would hopefully reach, and they would decide how to come to terms and deal with the situation on their own. The decision would not be made by the facilitator, the mediator.
And which I guess in a nutshell is what happened with you back then, but now it's a little more formalized or standardized in terms of how it's handled.
Yes, it is. It's very standardized now, and there's certain guidelines and criteria that has to be met. Both people have to agree. If one doesn't, then it doesn't work.
So this doesn't happen in every criminal case, then?
No, it doesn't. Only cases that are acceptable to the Crown Attorney will be referred to VORP. And in those cases, then both the offender and the victim are contacted and mm-hmm. asked if they would like to meet. Sometimes both of them agree, and sometimes they don't. You know, sometimes the offender will not want to meet the victim
because of the feelings that you understand. You know, kind of the embarrassment and the fear of having to face the
exactly.
victim. I guess, eh?
Yes, the embarrassment, the shame of seeing the person that you damaged their goods, their property, because then you're dealing with a person, not just something that you broke.
Right, right. Now, is this just happening in the Waterloo, Guelph area?
No, actually, it's global. It's to my surprise, I didn't know that anything became of this case until a year ago, April, when I was sitting in one of my law classes at Conestoga College at mm-hmm. Dune campus. I was in a law and security administration program, and we had a guest speaker come in from Community Justice Initiatives, and she started to tell the story of the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program. I was sitting there and I thought, oh man, she's talking about me. And she went
so
on.
So what did you do, put up your hand and say, let me tell you what really happened.
No, actually, she was pretty close on the details. There's 115 students in class.
It yeah.
Was, not something that I wanted to divulge at that time to all
no,
those
I guess
students.
Not.
Through the course of the her presentation, I found out that the program has gone into 14 different Well, there's over 1,400 different programs. It's in over 44 countries worldwide.
Holy smokes.
I was overwhelmed. Honestly, Colin, I tell you, I could hardly take notes. My palms were sweating. My heart was beating like 90. And I was debating during that 2 hours whether at the end of the class should I go up and tell them that one of those people, mm-hmm. one of the offenders was me. The guest speaker from Community Justice Initiatives said that they tried to locate these two offenders in 1999 for the 25th anniversary, but they couldn't locate them. And I thought, this is strange. I'm living in Fergus now, and I've been there since 1983.
And nobody ever tried to track you down.
Not too well, I guess.
Yeah.
At the end of class, I decided that, again, that I think this is the right thing to do. So mm-hmm. I went up and I told our guest speaker and my professor that I was one of those people.
Wow.
And yeah.
That must have taken some courage as well.
I believe it did. I was nervous. I was shaking a bit. I was not hesitating, but I was more comfortable with it than not, because I thought it feels right that I should do this. And guest speaker Julie Friesen said, "Wow, this is really something. Mark would really like to talk to you." So we exchanged numbers, and after a couple phone calls, I had a meeting with Mark Yancey.
The same probation officer from 29 years ago.
Yes, and now he's the executive director of Community Justice Initiatives in Kitchener, and he's built a career on this. 29 years later, I was sitting down having a meeting with him, and I can still hardly believe it.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And did you become involved with VORP after that as well?
Yes, I did. I became so interested in it, and in a way, I was ashamed. Still, ashamed of what I did and damaged people's property for no reason, and being very intoxicated wasn't an excuse. But at the same time, I was proud that something that I have done way back in my past, that now I'm just finding out that it had a really positive effect on society. So I joined Community Justice Initiatives. I took the mediation training program that was through the agency and Conrad Grebel, pardon me, University College at the University of Waterloo. I became a certified mediator, and for the summer of 2002, I spent over 250 hours volunteering for the agency.
Wow.
Being their court liaison for the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program in the criminal courtroom on Frederick Street here in Kitchener.
Wow. That's incredible. Oh. So you've come full circle after all this time, eh? To now you're on kind of the other side of the table and helping out some kids or people that were in your boots back 29 years ago, I guess, eh?
Yes. Yes, I would advise Crown Attorney and the lawyers, defense lawyers and duty counsel that VORP was present, and I'd answer any questions that they had. And I would recommend cases that were appropriate for the VORP program. I would update the Crown Attorney and with results from cases that we have just finished, and they came to successful conclusions, and take other referrals back to the office. And I was involved in a few mediations, but most of my time was in the court.
Okay, if people want to help out, if people want to volunteer, or they're interested in more information about the VORP program, what should they do?
Well, they can find out more information by contacting Community Justice Initiatives of Waterloo Region. They're on 39 Sterling Avenue North in Kitchener. The phone number is 744-6549. The email is cjiwr@cjiwr.com. The website is www.cjiwr.com. That's Community Justice Initiatives, WaterlooRegion.com. And they are always looking for more volunteers.
Great, great. Now, I understand there's a conference next year regarding this reconciliation process.
Yes, next year marks the 30th anniversary of the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program that started in Kitchener in 1974. The international convention is named Interaction 2004. For many of the past years, the conventions have been held in Minnesota, various places around the world. But to celebrate the 30th anniversary, it's being held where it all started, in Kitchener, next year, June the 2nd. It's known globally as the origin is globally known as the Elmira case, and in some cases known as the Kitchener experiment, which it was, because this was never tried before. But the results have just been staggering, and it's great for the judicial system. It frees up court time, it saves the courts money, and it gives victims a voice. And they need to have a voice, because they're the ones that were really affected. And the other thing that it does, it gives an offender somewhat of a second chance, in a sense that they can come out of it without a criminal record. But more than that, it gives them a chance to really see in their mind that they've caused harm, and it gives them a right to repair that harm.
That's great. That's great. That's pretty much sums it up in a nutshell, really. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect topic to in keeping with the Prisoner Justice Day, I think. Anyway, Russ, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate you coming in. You've been listening to coverage of Prisoner Justice Day at CFRU in Guelph. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you, Colin.